Welcome to Ruby Rogers Pegging Paradise podcast number 145 on October 11th, 2016. Changing the world, one ass at a time. If you enjoy and appreciate my work and you want to help me spread the word about pegging far and wide, consider becoming a patron of mine so that I can spend more time doing podcasts, answering questions, writing articles, and recording videos for all those people out there interested in pegging everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/rubyrider, or you can click the support my work button on the right-hand side of my website. And speaking of Patreon, I am going to go through my patrons and thank them. I'm not going to thank all of them in this podcast because I'm still trying to get in touch with some of them to find out if I can use their name. So let's start from the very beginning. Scott from Yorkshire has pledged $5 a month. Thank you so much, Scott. John from Houston, $5 a month. Yay! Thank you, John. Matt, the volcano. I let these people choose their name, okay? Matt, the volcano, $5 a month. Thank you, Matt. Arizona Kinkerer. Do not mistake that with Tinkerer. This is Arizona Kinkerer, $5 a month. Thank you, Arizona Kinkerer. Nathan, for $3 a month. Thank you, Nathan. Gray, for $3 a month. Yay, Gray. Thanks. Johannes for $5 a month. Thank you, Johannes. And Neil, spelled with a K, $3 a month. Thank you, Neil. So this is just part of the people who have pledged their support to me every month. I'm up to $192 a month, and I just want to shout it out loud and let everybody know that I'm so grateful for the support. It has enabled me to spend more time on these podcasts, and I'm trying to get them out more often and regularly. Regularly would be the key, with a capital R. So we're working on that one. I'm working on that one. You guys are helping, though, because you're really encouraging me, you know, poking the stick and saying, hello, do this regularly. And I do appreciate that, because that's my goal. And it feels so good when you reach goals, right? Speaking of reaching goals, this figging thing kind of turned into a challenge. It's almost like the figging challenge. We start talking about figging, and all of a sudden all these guys write in and go, so I tried it out. I admire your willingness to jump in and do something and then write about it for me. It's awesome. Okay, let me read this letter to you. It's a figging letter. Well, my first experience with figging was a bit of a disappointment. I don't consider myself a hardcore pain slut, but the ginger left me wanting. I tried both anal and urethral figging. I left both pieces in place for 30 minutes and recorded the effects each minute. After insertion, the reactions began almost immediately. By minute 3, my bottom was getting nicely warm. My urethra had already plateaued. I just didn't know it yet. On a scale of 1 to 10, the most intense the anal sensations got were a 6, and about a 3 for the urethral. Quite honestly, I am subsequently getting a pleasantly painful zing each time I pee, a result of the mild abrasion and stretching my urethra got via insertion. The peak heat generated by the anal fig was experienced during minutes 6 through 13. I tried everything to ramp it up, too. I manually squeezed my buttocks together. I smacked my own ass hard. I clenched my anal sphincter as hard as I could. I gyrated my hips and pelvis like a professional hula hooper. Nothing better than a 6. Damn. I have the remainder of the hand steeping in a sealed plastic bag in the crisper drawer of the refrigerator in an attempt to turbocharge the ginger. More to follow. Wow. That you just did a whole research project on figging, or at least the first part of it. I am very much impressed. You know, because all you people are into the figging thing and checking it out right now, I did some research myself, and I was also sent a link, I can't remember by whom, but that really got me into doing a little bit more research. And one of the ways that it said, both articles that I'm going to link to talk about turbocharging the ginger, in other words, really increasing the strength of it, is to put it in a Ziploc baggie in the fridge and keep it there until you see a little mold on the outside of it. And you're going to cut all that off and the mold's not going to hurt you or anything, but that means that it's totally turbocharged, that it's really a whole lot more strong than usual. That's the thing with organic food type items. You never know how strong it's going to be, because I imagine it varies from hand to hand. And for the uninitiated, which I was until I did this research, a big piece of ginger is called a hand. Fascinating. It does kind of look like it has a bunch of fingers on it, but that was something I learned as well. Love the description of all of the different things you did to try and get it to be more painful. So contrast that story with this one. John from Houston writes in and says this. Here is my figging story. I have stated before that I run a BDSM party group and a pegging party group. At one of our BDSM parties, I jokingly stated that I had a pound of ginger in the refrigerator and challenged anyone to a who can hold it in longest contest. One lady that I did not know at all took me up on the challenge. I told her that she could choose the opening and I would do the same. She told me to put it in the pooper. I selected my urethra and cut a piece about 1/4 by 1/4 by 4 inches long. I inserted mine first to give me the disadvantage. With her lying face to face down on the medical table, I gently inserted it in her anus. The ginger started to really burn my hole, but I am a very determined person. She started complaining right away, but did not give up. I hugged her and rubbed her back to take her mind off the discomfort. She actually started to tear up and told me she was in a lot of pain. I could not tell her that I hurt just as much. After about 20 minutes, she screamed uncle and told me that I won. I gently removed the ginger from her sore ass and cleaned her up with a wipe. I kissed her buttocks gently and she sat up. It was my turn to remove the ginger. I got behind it and pushed it out of my penis. By this time, I was in a lot of pain and tears were streaming down my cheeks. It hurt a lot to remove it. Once it was out, we sat and discussed the event. She truly enjoyed the experience and wants to try again in the vagina. I never let on how much it hurt me. For the next 3 days, it burned like hell when I peed. I had done this before, and it never hurt this much. Next time I want to insert a very large piece in my anus and another in my urethra. So, John likes pain. Perhaps because you had that hand of ginger in the refrigerator for a long time, or did you say freezer? I think you said refrigerator, yeah. So perhaps you had already turbocharged it, and that's why it was so intense. How interesting. You know, until you guys started experimenting with the ginger, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, I had never thought about putting it in urethra. Holy crap. I mean, I'm not really into sounding and that kind of stuff anyway, even though I know there's a lot of guys out there that love it. But wow, putting ginger in there? Holy shit. It just seems really, really intense. But then that's the fun, is when you get to play on those intense edges sometimes. And so thank you guys for writing in. Really appreciate the ginger updates. Welcome any and all other stories about ginger that anybody has out there. Okay, here's my next email. I have always enjoyed anal pleasure, and I've had my first experience with an escort strap-on session about a year ago, and enjoyed it immensely. I've always had a hemorrhoid right on my anus, and have sought for it to be removed from my doctor, but she didn't suggest it. I really feel deprived, as I enjoy anal play so much. Any suggestions? Please advise. Thank you. And he signs it, deprived and not alive. And the subject was deprived. So I feel badly for you that you can't indulge in your favorite kind of play because of the hemorrhoid. So let's dive into talking about hemorrhoids once again on this podcast. I've learned a few more things, so this is what I know. There are 4 different stages of hemorrhoids. The first is when it doesn't stick out from the anus. There might be itching or pain in the area. There might be a little bit of enlargement or distension, maybe a little bit of anal bleeding noticed. Probably more indirect, like in the stool or on the toilet paper. That's like stage 1, okay? Stage 2 is when it's prolapsed and it bulges out a little bit, only with bowel movements, but it spontaneously reduces and goes back in the rectum afterwards. Then stage 3 is prolapsed with a bowel movement and must be manually pushed back in. Okay. The last one is it's prolapsed, it can't be pushed back in, and the hemorrhoid becomes like a permanent protrusion. the rectal mucosa, which is the inner lining, also starts to prolapse. So here's the deal. The first two stages that I described are compatible with massaging it and or doing Kegel exercises, which exercise your PC muscles to reduce that. That is the non-surgical way to reduce it. Why hemorrhoids happen is a lack of circulation in the area. That's what causes them. So it makes a lot of sense that if you increase the circulation in the area, then you are helping to reduce those hemorrhoids. And in fact, as you'll remember, just not very many podcasts ago, a guy wrote in and said, hey, all I do is do my Kegel exercises for about 15 minutes, and it reduces any problems I'm having with a current hemorrhoid. So there is evidence right there that somebody has done this and finds it very successful. So, you know, you exercise that part of your body, you get the circulation going, and it reduces the inflammation because it gets the blood flowing more like it should be, as opposed to closed down, restricted circulation, and then your body kind of makes a new path is kind of what happens. So there's that. So what do you do that with? Well, you could do it with one of the Aneros Helix Thins. That's been shown to reduce hemorrhoid issues. You can also use this thing called a private gym, which is actually a Kegel exerciser for men. And I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but I've recently become aware of how important pelvic floor muscles and Kegel exercises are. And at this point in describing all this, I'm going to depart to a personal issue of exercising my pelvic floor muscles with Kegel exercises that has nothing to do with hemorrhoids. But believe me, I will return. So here's the deal. I've been really wanting to exercise more, right? And I haven't been doing it. The other thing that's happening in my life is a long while ago, Tiffany gave me this device that helps exercise the PC muscles, the pelvic floor. It's called Kegel, spelled K-G-O-A-L. And it actually has an app that connects with your phone. And while you're working out with this thing, you can see what's happening on your phone. It has a Bluetooth connection. Well, okay, fine. I hadn't tried it. I didn't really understand it. I mentioned it on a previous podcast because I was waxing poetic about how important these PC muscles are and how important it is to do the Kegel exercises for men and for women. So this is two areas of my life that I would really like to get on the whole exercise wagon thing, right? So today I decided this was going to change because I've tried different things before and I've largely been ignoring the Kegel exerciser thing, okay? And I just haven't been making it to the gym. So here's what I am going to do. Here's my promise to everyone. I am going to put once a week when I do the podcast, I am going to put a little chart of my week, how many times I went to the gym or worked out, because I don't always have to go to the gym to work out. I can hike, I can do a bunch of things. Whether I worked out and whether or not I used the Mina Kegel is what it's called. So you guys are going to be able to see my progress, should you even care. I'm going to put it on the blog post. I probably won't announce it every week unless I'm really proud, like I've done it a whole bunch. But accountability is one of the things that keeps people exercising. This is why people get exercise buddies. So I am going to use you all. I'm going to use you, and I hope some of you out there like being used. I'm going to use you for my exercise buddy and my accountability. I'm going to put that little chart at the bottom of each podcast post on my blog. So there you go. It's going to have a K and a W. The W means working out. The K means the Kegel. So if you want to, you can either picture me at the gym or you can picture me with this way cool thing inside me squeezing my muscles and making the little lines move on my phone, because I swear to God, that's what it's like. So that's the female version of it for any of you women out there listening, or for the men who have partners who have urinary incontinence issues, who would like to experience more satisfying orgasms. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that a strong pelvic floor will do. And also, pelvic floors can get really tight with just everyday tension and cause a lot of pain. So exercising that area will help that as well, help avoid that. Keep it stirred up, keep it exercised, keep it healthy. So that's the women's one, right? Okay, so now the other one for the men is called the private gym. I'm going to embed a video on my blog about this, because the video that I'm going to put is a bunch of guys talking about what happened when they used it and their testimonials. So this thing has clinically proven results. And let me tell you what they are. I'm just going to run through them all. 75% of the men experienced improved erectile rigidity and strength. So harder hard-ons, awesome. Of that 75%, 25% of those men would describe it as being greatly improved. The next one is 90% experienced heightened orgasm intensity. Hey, we are all about intense orgasms here at Pegging Paradise, right? The whole 10 times as powerful thing with prostate stimulation, right? So 90% of the men in this clinical trial experienced heightened orgasm intensity. 40% experienced improved ejaculatory control. Get down. And of that 40%, 25% of those men would describe it as being greatly improved ejaculatory control. 75% of men experienced improved ejaculatory force. Ooh, distance records. And of those 75%, 12% of those men would describe it as being greatly improved ejaculatory force. 90% of these men experienced improved confidence in the bedroom or sexual performance. And 50% of that 90% would describe that as being greatly improved confidence in the bedroom and sexual performance. And last but not least, 60% of men experienced increased sexual pleasure. 38% of that 60% would describe it as greatly increased sexual pleasure. So there you have it. The clinical trials have proven it. They have the testimonials and everything. And the reason I am going on and on about this is because it helps hemorrhoids. That's why. That's one of the things that it can really help with if you're one of the first two stages. So there you go. Exercising that whole area helps. And it just kind of, it makes me laugh a little bit because it's like dick exercises, you know? I love that idea, dick exercises. There's a DVD, and you put the DVD in, and you get yourself hard, and you watch the DVD while you do it, so it tells you how long that you need to contract the muscle, when to relax, and it just leads you right through it. So that's one of the reasons that I'm talking about the private gym, is because it should help hemorrhoids. You know, there's other things that you might want to try as well, because anal toys in general, if they're increasing circulation, would help. But I imagine there's kind of a fine line in there between, you don't want to fuck yourself with a dildo if you have a hemorrhoid because it'll irritate it. Vibrations also have been known to help. But when I say massaging the area, you know, it's not where you want to get in there and really go for it, because as you would imagine, that might irritate it. So I think the exercises are your best bet. You can do Kegel exercises without this device. It's just that this device is fucking awesome. You put little weights on your dick and you lift it. Can you imagine that? And you watch the DVD and then all of a sudden, it's fucking awesome. And these guys that did the testimonials talked about it took about 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. And they really noticed a difference. So I would suggest that if this is something that appeals to you, go to the Linkorama, check it out. But that's all of the hemorrhoid information that I have for you. I think when it gets to stage 3 and 4, that's when you have to go to a doctor and have something done about it. So I'm not sure what stage you're at. The man who wrote in with this, deprived and what did you describe that as? Deprived and not alive. That's what you described yourself as. So exercises would help, but I'm not sure what stage you're at, so only you really know that. When you mentioned it was right on your anus, I'm not sure if you meant that it had already prolapsed to the point where it was sticking out, and I'm not sure why your doctor wouldn't recommend it, but ask your doctor if she would recommend anal intercourse. Hopefully you have a good enough relationship with your doctor and she is sex positive enough to where this doesn't freak her out. But it would be good to ask her advice and tell her that you really like prostate play and you'd like to give it a try. That would be the best advice I have for you today. Thanks for writing in, and please do let us know how it goes. I hate to think of you there deprived and not alive. Oh, good luck to you, sir. Okay, this is something I took off the forum at peggingparadise.com, and it was in our topic section called Pegging in Psychology. I am still eagerly awaiting our first full pegging session. We have to go toy shopping first. There is a couple of really good stores around here which offer non-toxic and high-quality toys. I hope they will also be helpful in advising us what equipment would be best for us. But I am already sensing that I have to take care that expectations don't overshoot, and the pressure built up by them doesn't lead to disappointment. I have been into anal pleasure all my life, and I have experimented with the Aneros Helix and other toys for some years now, and also receiving anal stimulation from my partner, mostly using her fingers, but sometimes also a dildo, is part of our routine in bed. I am very thrilled that she reacted positively to me telling her about pegging me. Even though she has been giving me anal stimulation for a long time, it still took me quite something to actually bring it up. And we both agreed to go shopping together. I hope we will not only get pegging equipment, but also something we can use on her. My second biggest fear about this, that given all the many pressing issues we have to deal with around our jobs, our kids, our household and community, we will put it to the bottom of our to-do list again and again. My biggest fear, though, is that the actual experience will feel nowhere as great as I expect it to. As with the first time of having sex, you dream about it for a long time, and once you really do it, you feel you are doing it all wrong. You feel discomfort here and there. In short, since I have fantasized about this for quite a while now, I suppose reality doesn't have a chance of living up to my expectations. That's also the kind of experience I had with the Aneros. You really can't force it. Sometimes it works, but often nothing much happens. I guess the most intense feeling of anal pleasure I experienced during my life came completely spontaneously, without any external stimulation, without any toy inserted, without me having expected or working towards them. They just came over me as a surprise gift from somewhere. I am not only worrying about my own expectations, but also about the pressure this might put on my partner. The last time she tried to give me a prostate massage, we kind of gave up. She says her fingers might be too short to reach my prostate, and I also did not feel the intense pleasure I expected. Maybe the first pegging experience will also not at all be smooth. She might feel insecure, untrained. I might experience it to be less intense than I was hoping for. I guess the answer is that we don't have to rush it. We can give it all the time we have. We should not expect the first time to be perfect. And yet, there is some tension between really wanting something so bad for a really long time on the one hand, and being relaxed about it because you cannot force it anyway on the other hand. It is not only that I really, really want the sensations, both the physical pleasure and the mental experience of getting fucked, but also that I desire for my partner to experience how she has the power of causing these intense sensations in me. So yes, for me, and maybe to a lesser degree for her, the whole issue is loaded with expectations. And even though they maybe can be a good thing in building up arousal, I assume that they can also have a destructive effect, as reality is prone to fail against them. Well, maybe not. We'll see. Wow, so you, sir, are really in your head here. And I'm not blaming you, and I'm not being critical. It's just really clear that you've been thinking a lot about this. So, here's my suggestion. First of all, celebrate the beginning of your exploration into pegging. You know, if you drink, toast to that. Have some fun with it. Really celebrate that you are crossing this line, and it's a line that you fully anticipate to lead to really a lot of fun stuff sexually. And then, enjoy every delicious part of it, because, you know, all these firsts are only going to happen once. For example, there's only going to be one first time that she finds just the right spot and just sends you to the moon. There's only going to be one first time that the dildo falls out while she's fucking you and she doesn't notice and you tell her and you both laugh about it. There's only going to be one first time that she puts on the strap-on and you get your first look at her with her first cock, right? There are a lot of ways to stimulate a prostate, and yes, sometimes women's fingers are not long enough. Some men respond to what I would call as like a drive-by with a dildo. Some need a side swipe and others need a head-on. So the drive-by is clearly something just going by it and barely touching it. A side swipe is, yeah, a little bit more pressure, and the head-on is exactly that, a lot of pressure on the prostate. So these different techniques are affected by the curve and the firmness of the dildo. Still, other men will respond to vibrations in a way that no non-vibrating toy can even approach. Who knows which of these you are? It's possible that if you find a toy that provides for firmer pressure, you may experience pleasure at your will as opposed to just the universe providing you with an awesome thing and it being not dependable. This is what a lot of men find. But getting back to your first experience, be in the moment as much as you can. Enjoy just going through the experience with her instead of focusing on attaining the most pleasure possible the very first time that you play, because that's going to come with practice. So just be grateful that you're there doing that together. Be patient and encouraging, because the learning curve is steep for a woman learning how to fuck. She may have been playing with your ass for some time, but her hips don't know how to move necessarily. And be playful, laugh at the awkward parts, and give each other lots of feedback. As far as it falling to the bottom of your priority list, the only advice I can give there is schedule a time to play regularly and try very hard to stick to it. And whether that is playing in terms of having sex or whether you separate out that pegging from your sexual play, and you say, okay, at least once a month or at least once a week or whatever your schedule allows for, we're going to do this. And if you don't do it, then you absolutely reschedule it the same time that it gets canceled. It's not like, oh yeah, we didn't get to do that last week and we never rescheduled. No, as soon as you go, damn it, we have to do this thing and be responsible and do our adulting thing so we can't have that pegging thing that we were going to, reschedule it then. And don't let it fall into the folder of, oh, right, we forgot about that. Don't forget about it. Make it a priority. And that way, when the day comes and building up to it, you know, even if it's been rescheduled, it's sort of like, you know, you can sext each other and send each other texts and say, ooh, can't wait to get your ass tonight, or can't wait to feel you inside me, or something like that, and build up the anticipation. Make it a fun thing. Make it something to look forward to as opposed to, oh, we have to try that thing again. So if there's any way that you can think of to make it fun, definitely do that. Because above all, having fun is really, really important in this whole formula. If you're not having fun, why do it? And I think when you're relaxed and having fun, that's when things actually start to happen more. That's when you can relax and perhaps responsiveness is allowed to peak. So let me know when I can play that music for you. I can't wait. After all this buildup, you've got all of us anticipating it as well. Thank you for sharing that with us. So this next question I get asked a lot, I found it in the forum, but I do get asked this quite a bit, and it's probably going to be one of the very first ones I do for the videos, and here we go. Any advice or tips on how to be stretched more for bigger toys? You know, there is no magic formula. Mostly, it's just a matter of gradually using bigger toys or more fingers and going really, really slow. And, for example, there's a man who had never had much anal play himself. He never really played with his own ass, and maybe girlfriends had stuck a finger up there a couple of times, but he hadn't had anything up his ass in quite some time, okay? So, he wanted to get pegged, like, that night. And when I discovered that this was the situation, I think I took about an hour of massaging and teasing and playing a little bit with his ass, and then massaging and teasing and playing a little bit with his balls and massaging and teasing. See what I mean? So if you do that, you really allow everything to loosen up and relax. And once again, there is no magic formula, but you don't want to go too fast because that's when you get pain. What you are technically doing when you are stretching for bigger toys is you are very slowly but surely, now don't freak out everybody, causing little tiny micro tears in the inner sphincter. So if you just happened upon this podcast and you're going, what the hell? Oh my God, I'm never going to stick anything up my ass. Let me explain. There are two concentric sphincters in your ass. one inside the other, not one behind the other, one inside the other. So here's the deal about that. The inside one is involuntary muscle that only stretches so far. And once it's stretched beyond that, then it is rendered useless. And again, hang on to your seat because I'll explain. The larger one, the outer one, is voluntary muscle and can stretch a long, long way, explaining the different videos that many of us have seen of insertion of unbelievably big items into people's asses. So, back to the one that you're rendering useless. If you do the micro tears and you stretch it beyond a certain point, then it's never going to go back to where it was before. But anyone who has had a couple of bouts of bad constipation and passed a bowel movement about twice as big as usual has already done all the damage that is ever going to be done to that inner sphincter. That's the first point. The second point is that inner sphincter doesn't really have much of a job beyond controlling gas and liquids. So I've had guys tell me after getting pegged, I can fart more easily because that inner sphincter has been stretched, okay? And as far as keeping liquids in, well, if you've got liquid bowel movements, you've got a much bigger problem than having the inner sphincter rendered useless, okay? So that's the deal. The outer sphincter is supported by four groups. I can't remember whether it's three or four in the moment when I'm talking here, but groups of huge muscles that totally compensate. So when I say it renders it useless and liquid bowel movements, you're thinking, uh-oh, so if I have diarrhea, it's going to be leaking out. No, the outer sphincter more than makes up for that because it's supported by groups of muscles that are really big and strong, okay? So all of that physiology, all of that physiological specificity to let you know that you don't need to worry about stretching. But I did want to explain why you should take it slow, because you are causing little teeny tiny micro tears every time you stretch it a little further. So if your ass is a little sore the next day, that might be part of it. Again, there is no magic formula. You just want to go up very slowly. Can you go and buy a specialized set of graduated toys? Sure. Or you can just buy toys that you're interested in using and make them a little bit bigger in diameter each time. So if you want to, you can buy a butt plug and wear it around and in the hopes that it will sort of get you used to opening up. And to an extent it will, but in terms of trying to attain a certain size, that is just strictly using toys that are bigger. I do not advise you jumping up more than a quarter inch at a time. So if you've got a dildo that's an inch and a half in diameter, the next one should be an inch and three quarters, okay? And you can do smaller adjustments as well. I mean, they have like an inch and 5/8 and things like that. But don't jump more than a quarter inch at a time because that's a little abrupt and can actually stretch things too fast. And when I say stretch things too fast, you know, if you're going to spend 2-3 hours working up to it, fine. But when I say go slow, what I find is that most people think, oh, 10 minutes and then you should be able to take this, right? That's why I told you that story about that guy, because I got him there. I got him there. He took an inch and a quarter size dildo. It was the Ergo Mini with the suction cup on the bottom, so it was dual density. I like to use soft ones in the beginning because they're a little more forgiving. And remarkably enough, this young man was really responsive and right off the bat had a prostate orgasm. So I wanted to tell the story because I did take about an hour to get his ass ready. He said, I want you to fuck me, right? So quarter inch at a time, buy bigger toys, and work on it and go really, really slow. Oh, and really, really importantly, do not forget to use lots and lots and lots of lube. I'll put a link to the lube. I'll put a link to the Ergo Mini. And have patience. Have lots of patience, you know? Do this over days at a time, weeks at a time. Give your ass time to recover when you've stretched it a bit. And that's how you do it. Really, it's just basics. Let us know when you attain the goal that you are shooting for. I don't know what that is because you didn't say. Thanks for the question. Okay, the last part of this podcast, what I'm going to talk about is something that happened recently in the news. I don't often go to the news, but every once in a while I do. And one of the things that's happened in the news recently is there was an arrest of the man who runs Backpage.com, and he was charged for trafficking of minors. And I want to talk about that for a little bit because it's a topic that very few people understand. There is a big, big difference between sex workers, which we've talked about before on the podcast, and sex traffickers. There are quite a few people out there who are doing sex work of their own volition, of their own choice. They are not being coerced. They do not have a pimp. They're not being abused. And they choose this work because it suits their situation to make a certain amount of money in a certain amount of time, and they've chosen it. So however you believe about the legality of sex workers, think about this for a moment. If you watch porn at all, porn is people getting paid to fuck each other, okay? The only difference between porn and sex work is that there's film. They're making a film. So that's a really interesting point to think about. The very best thing that can happen with sex work, in my opinion, is for it to be decriminalized completely, regulated, and all kinds of provisions to keep the sex workers safe. Because when that happens and when they are taken out of the arena of doing something illegal, they are much more likely to report people who abuse them, clients who come in and abuse them. So you're offering more protection when they don't have to run around and hide. Backpage.com was actually a place where a lot of sex workers advertised. There has been a very concerted effort to shut down all of these places over the last years by the, I don't know what to call them, the people who were totally anti-prostitution, I guess. What they've been doing is they were talking about, you know, anti-prostitution for a long, long time. And then people kind of stop listening because this is something that's been around forever. It's going to be around forever. It's been described as a victimless crime. So when people stop listening, then they started talking about sex trafficking. Sex trafficking is a horrible thing. Human trafficking is a horrible thing. There are many, many people who are trafficked in this world for labor purposes. Then it's awful. So back to the sex trafficking, they've made these really pull your heartstrings posters of young kids and talked about them being sex trafficked and how horrible it is. And they made this a priority to stop this from happening. And they started funneling funds into local law enforcement and places like that. So unfortunately, in the interest of continuing to receive these funds, the organizations that receive the money need to show that they're really doing something, and they need the statistics to show that they're making a difference here and really reducing in the sex trafficking situation. So what they did was they widened the description and the definition of sex trafficking to include sex workers, a lot of them. For example, if you are a person who comes over from, let's say, Sweden, and you decide you want to be a sex worker here in the United States, you can be arrested for sex trafficking because you're trafficking yourself. And this really defies logic. It's very strange. So back to talking about the Backpage guy, he got arrested in Texas. He lives in Denmark, if I'm not mistaken. And he flew into Texas. I think that's where their United States headquarters is. And they arrested him. So here's the interesting thing about this case that didn't get reported by the media. Because the media is so happy to talk about, oh, and sex trafficking ring and supports this, and we're prosecuting these people and we're going to get them. And they're all over it because that's what the public wants to hear. The reality of this guy who owns Backpage is that he was already working with law enforcement, he was working with the FBI to turn over suspect ads to make sure that sex trafficking was indeed not happening. In a bizarre, twisted situation of logic, they used that as evidence that he actually was doing business with sex traffickers. you know, don't ask me how that works. It's likely going to be thrown out in court, but it's a political move for the election. If this guy gets prosecuted, then okay, what about the Parks and Recs guy, right? Can he get arrested because there's people doing drugs in his park? I mean, that's how silly it is. So I want to talk about it because so many people conflate sex trafficking and sex work. I know a fair number of sex workers. And what I would like to dispel is this assumption that all sex workers are somehow helpless, they're being coerced, they're really unhappy, they're desperate. Not really. There's actually a fair amount of sex workers who choose this as their work and who are doing just fine. They have no pimp. They have nobody they need to report to, nobody they need to give money to, nobody who abuses them except the danger of having an abusive client, of course. So don't assume that sex workers don't want to be doing sex work. When you assume that, it's sort of like, well, oh my God, how could you possibly want to do that? You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't like their jobs. This, you might not like your job sometimes, but other times you might like it a lot. It really depends. It's very individual. But that's not a measure for saying, oh, nobody should have to do that. That's the thing. They don't have to do it. They're choosing to do it. We all choose the jobs that we want. So now the sex trafficking thing. I'm going to put a link in the Linkorama to this story that I put up on Facebook, and it is a 4-part article. It's a fantastic piece of journalism, and it is about what was reported in the media as being the biggest sex trafficking sting in the country this year. It happened in Seattle, right? It's a long read, but it will give you some insight into what is wrong with them jumping onto bandwagons and waving flags and going, oh, we caught a sex trafficker, because it really wasn't what happened. So if you have some time and you want to check that out, give it a read. But I encourage you to do a little research. There's a couple of countries who are handling sex work the way that the sex educators and the sex workers and all the people involved in sex positive jobs would love to see. And those two countries are Netherlands and New Zealand. Usually the biggest fear when you legalize it is that all of a sudden there's going to be a ton of prostitutes. And that didn't happen. The other fear is that when you legalize it, there's a ton of trafficking. Actually, what it does is it creates a structure and a regulation so that you can find the traffickers. You have to have identification that proves you are a certain age. And it creates the structure to screen out the people who aren't supposed to be there. When you research this, one of the things you might find is, I think it was reported about Netherlands. I'm not sure whether it was Netherlands or New Zealand, that when they legalized it, that all of a sudden they had an incidence of more sex trafficking. Statistics are a very interesting thing, because one of the things that happened was they put a lot more emphasis behind looking for sex traffickers. Okay, so do you see where I'm going with this? If they put a lot more emphasis behind looking for sex trafficking, then they were going to find more people who were doing it simply because they're putting more resources and time towards that intent. And so that could be the reason why the statistics went up for sex trafficking. So that's just a little example about how when you read something and it says, no, you know, in this country, sex trafficking went way up, that's what could be behind it. So I kind of did this monologue here to give you more of a balanced view of what sex work is like. I truly believe it is a victimless crime. I truly believe that if we are going to pay people to fuck each other and film it, that we could take the film out of it, and it should be legal for people to exchange services for money. So however you feel about it, it's going to be a long time before this comes up politically and becomes something that is talked about amongst the government. I do want to say also that there are a number of very well-respected organizations that have recommended decriminalization of sex work, and the biggest reason, including Amnesty International, and the biggest reason that they did recommend this is for the safety of the sex workers. So that's one more thing that you can't hide behind when you say, oh no, we need to eliminate sex work completely because it's such a dangerous thing and we want to help these people. If you really want to help them, you create a structure that allows them to report crimes. You create a structure that allows them to get the help they need. Because the whole idea of eliminating prostitution is laughable. It's just never going to happen. So Amnesty International recommended decriminalization and a bunch of other organizations. I'll put links in the Linkorama to those organizations. And I've talked your ear off long enough. I appreciate your patience in hearing me rant about this. I got pretty upset about it when I started looking into the details when this guy got arrested. So there you go. I'll leave it there. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blog, my podcast, my erotica, and the forum. Pegging101.com has my work as well. What you'll find there are informational articles that have no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps. You can find a sampling of those under the tab Follow on my website for both iPhones and Android. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you like. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. If you order anything from enticeme.com that I've spoken about in the podcast or on my blog, please remember to use the coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase. Send your questions to ruby@peggingparadise.com. No question is too crazy, too complicated. I'm doing the C's today, and it's on the fly here. No question is too crazy, too complicated, too common, or too curious. Hey, I scored on the C's. Awesome. So, when you ask those kind of questions, we all learn with you. All the people listening say, hey, that was an awesome question. So don't be shy. Throw those questions in my mailbox. Or call me, 805-500-6544. Thanks for downloading and listening, everybody. You all rock. Happy pegging.